It is Friday night, and we are getting you ready for Conference Championship Weekend. Who is the most likely to head to Super Bowl 54? We're going to highlight those four teams over the next 2 hours. Hello, folks. Elissa Walker-Campbell along with you. Would love to connect. You can join us on Twitter at eradiosportsinfo, eradiosports.com, and always go back and listen to all of our interviews at podcastarena.com. Our producer tonight, of course, is Robert Harris. Give him a follow at RoboHarris. And Bobby, I know you are still reeling after the Texans' loss. The Chiefs erase an early 24-point deficit to beat the Texans by 20.
Yeah, I'm quite devastated because that game, if you were a Texans fan, you looked at the score in the first quarter, you jumped for hooray. You jumped for just everything because you thought the Texans were going to secure that victory.
Well, does Kansas City, do they look like Super Bowl favorites to you?
I think they are. I mean, Andy Reid, offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy, put a game plan to secure to me that this team is a Super Bowl potential favorite.
You know, I have to wonder as Texans fans, you know, how would you assess or what kind of grade would you give the coaching in this game as far as with the Texans to just be completely blown out at the end?
I'm a nice gentleman, so I would say a D-. Some people would say a F. I mean, if we're just going to go out the first quarter, of course, A+. But honestly
it's
speaking,
it's not how you start, it's how you finish.
It's all about how you finish, and that's the old saying. And I think these guys didn't finish quietly well. I mean, the defense for Romeo Crennel was just awful. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is a future Hall of Fame quarterback, but they just made it look easy. After three possessions, they went 3 and out. The Chiefs came back roaring and never stopped scoring.
Well, Patrick Mahomes, no doubt, he is, I would say, the most talented passer in the NFL. But as we look ahead, you know, moving forward for the Texans, will they bounce back?
Not if Bill O'Brien is at the helm, but I think with no first and second round draft picks for the next 2 years, it's going to be tough.
We're going to be getting into all of this tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. That has been Robert Harris, who's been with us, and he will continue being with us in Hour 2. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, it is Friday night. Welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, always the next generation of sports radio and many different ways to connect. Love to hear from you at eRadio Sports Info, eradiosports.com and podcastarena.com. We always have to pause, recognize the folks. They make it happen, and that is O'Reilly Auto Parts. Are you doing a repair that needs a special tool? Well, O'Reilly Auto Parts makes it easy with the Loaner Tool Program. Over 80 specialized loaner tools are available, so O'Reilly's is sure to have a tool in stock to help you get the job done right. Purchase the needed parts and put down a deposit on the loaner tool, and then return the tool in the original condition and receive a full refund. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Well, it is conference championship weekend. Who is most likely to head to the Super Bowl? We're going to highlight the four remaining teams, and so delighted to have back with us. We love him. That is Andy McNamara. You know what? He just continues to expand his territory. He is now the National Fantasy Sports Analyst with Sportsnet, and also you can check him out with DraftKings. Good to have you back, and Happy New Year, Andy.
Yes, Happy New Year. Happy 2020. We're rolling. There's so many football storylines. It's awesome. It never stops.
Okay, so who has the best chance to win it all when we look at these four teams and you talk about the 49ers, the Chiefs, the Titans, and the Packers?
You know what amazes me is I keep wanting to write off the Titans. They shouldn't be here, right? But they keep winning. So now I feel like I'm in my own head of like, all right, they shouldn't be here. They shouldn't have beaten New England. They shouldn't have beaten the Ravens. They should not beat the Chiefs. But Well, you have Ryan Tannehill, who's advancing this team on the back of Derrick Henry, throwing for back-to-back under 100-yard passing games. And I heard that he was the first guy to do that since Terry Bradshaw back in the 70s. So that one, to me, is going to be the most interesting, just as it is a true ultimate underdog story. Can they do it? Can they topple the Chiefs? Can Andy Reid be figured out like he has so many times deep in the playoffs? If there's ever a time for Andy Reid to get back to the Super Bowl, this is it. So I think that matchup to me is probably the most interesting. The Packers 49ers one, though, of course, my goodness, you got Jimmy G, Aaron Rodgers, the running game, the two coaches. Like, it's awesome.
Well, as we look ahead to this weekend's AFC and NFC championships, who are the players you suggest for daily fantasy players that you would select? Obviously, you're with DraftKings, so we got to give a hit on that.
Yeah, well, definitely. And here's the interesting thing. When you're filling out your DraftKings lineup, when the slate starts to get knocked down, now you do have some interesting options on DraftKings. What you can do is do what's called a showdown contest, which means you can pick just the actual game. So if you just want to do Packers, Niners, you can do that. And then what happens is you're not stuck with specific position eligibility. You pick a captain at 1.5 times the salary, but you also get 1.5 times the points, and you have to fit it all in within the salary structure there. So that's one option, but you can also do the classic between the two teams. So to me, it comes down to this. Where's the value compared to the production? Because you need to fill out a roster. So if we're looking at the whole classic part, we look at, okay, Pat Mahomes put up 41.14 fantasy points on the DraftKings slate last week.
Uh-huh.
Now, he is over $1,600 more than Aaron Rodgers. And when you look at Rodgers, he put up just shy of 20. So that's almost double. So you think, okay, maybe Mahomes is the guy to go with. The other thing to keep in mind is as well, and you don't want to get too hung up on this, but you have to consider it. If I pick Pat Mahomes and Mahomes has a great day, well, if everybody else picks Pat Mahomes, that doesn't do me any good, right? Like it's a bit of a wash.
Uh-huh.
So I think when we're looking at it at quarterback, you, despite the great regular season that Ryan Tannehill had, right now the formula, you can't pick him. He's more expensive than Jimmy G. So the best value on the slate might be to go with Jimmy Garoppolo, even though we're seeing it much more run-focused. So Jimmy G probably offers the best value at 5,200. I would probably go with Aaron Rodgers at 61, just because it's lower than Mahomes. You should be expecting a high teens, low 20s type of game. So you're not missing out that much, but you're still saving. So that's where I'd start at quarterback.
Well, when we look at the quarterbacks in these final four teams, it is fascinating watching. You know, you just talked about Aaron Rodgers, but in your mind, is Patrick Mahomes, is he, we're going to talk about it tonight, is he the most talented passer in the NFL?
Gotta be. He just, at this point, he looks completely healthy. I think it's a little lost, too, of like, oh, he wasn't the fantasy darling he was last year. Well, he got injured. He had the ankle first, remember? Then he had that knee, which, how the heck he came back from his knee? Like, we saw it pop back in on TV. That was,
right,
wow.
Right.
The incredible comeback he was able to do. What it has done, I think, is at first it sort of limited his rushing and that little bit of extra, which you like in fantasy. Didn't last week, right? 53 yards on the ground. You see what he's able to do. That offense is just so talented. And I think with Damian Williams really separating himself as the true feature running back, what that does, of course, is it keeps it a defense honest. And it keeps it a defense like Tennessee, even though they've given up their 28th when it comes ranked to giving up points to fantasy quarterbacks. You still got to respect what Mike Vrabel's been able to do and running down the clock. But I think there's no doubt, if you look at it top to bottom, it's got to be Pat Mahomes.
You know, when I think of the start of the NFL season, would these four teams have been your pick to be the final four team standing?
Oh, gosh. Not the Titans.
Not right. There's a big surprise.
Right. That is the shocker. And it's kind of, it's fun in a refreshing way. Like, I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, so I was hoping that my Browns would be here. But
yeah.
Oops, that didn't quite happen. Instead, we're hiring a new head coach. But anyway, the Titans, here's the funny story with them, is, of course, to start the year, it was Marcus Mariota at quarterback. If anybody tells you that they foresaw Ryan Tannehill, who I've coined Tana Thrill, coming in, taking over, and not just being serviceable, not just being a game manager, being phenomenal from week 8 onward, they're lying to you. There's no way anybody in the world saw this coming. Out of the other three, I think it's pretty safe to say that you could have made an argument for the 49ers with Jimmy G coming back healthy, with Aaron Rodgers, new head coach, and it's always Rodgers. So very, you know, that's not surprising. I'd say maybe the Saints, you might have popped in over the Packers. You could make an argument. Nobody saw the Ravens surge coming. They stopped. The Patriots, of course, no matter what the situation, you always have to give them a fighting chance. So the team, pretty much just the Titans would be the team that really shocks me. The other three, you could have made an argument that, yeah, it makes sense that they're there.
Hey, DraftKings, Andy McNamara with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You can check him out, National Fantasy Sports Analyst at Sportsnet. And you just said it, Andy, you are a diehard Browns fan. So your thoughts on your new head coach, what do you think?
Oh, you know what? I liked the press conference, but here's the thing. The Browns, this is the 18th full-time head coach. They have a different head coach every year or two. And every coach that comes in says the same thing. We're going to work hard. We're going to change the culture. We have a great fan base. I've heard it. I've heard it all. So I like Kevin Stefanski presented himself. What I'm nervous about, though, is it's yet another first-time head coach who was just a coordinator for a short period of time, only one full year as a full-time offensive coordinator. The question is going to be, does he call his own plays year one? If he does, that fills me with a lot of concern because I've seen this movie in Cleveland before. Everyone comes in, want to call their own plays, get overwhelmed, and they get fired after 2 years. So if Stefanski can bring in someone to really help him call the plays or take a lot off his plate, he's only 37, 38 years old. It's something where you can get overwhelmed and overrun really fast. And he's never been a head coach at any level.
Right.
So I like the offense. I like what he was able to do with Minnesota. So we're going to see. Like, I'm really at the point where it's just like, I don't care what the press conference says. Win week one. Win the opener. You only done that once since 1999. Win the opener. They still don't have a GM, by the way. So we still have to figure out who the general manager, who's going to be picking the players. Right? Like, that's the question. So on paper, I do like what he brings. I like his offense. I like that he was able to work directly with guys like Case Keenum and really rejuvenate his career for a single season, get creative and bring the best out of Kirk Cousins.
Mm-hmm.
If he can get Baker Mayfield right, here's the bottom line. If you can get Baker Mayfield right and improve the offensive line, you got the horses at receiver and in the backfield to make this a dynamic offense. So the main thing, get Baker right. You do that, then you got a chance.
Hey, what a great way to kick off Hour 1, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Andy McNamara, give him a follow on Twitter, AndyMC81. He does it all. DraftKings, also National Fantasy Sports Analyst with Sportsnet. And we look forward to another conversation around the Super Bowl. Thank you, Andy.
Oh, anytime. Thank you.
You're the best. Much more coming your way here in Hour 1. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, we got you covered Friday night's SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Love to hear from you at eRadio Sports Info, eRadiosports.com, and podcastarena.com. Always think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the guaranteed lowest price and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Well, it is time to tee it up. We're going to go inside the ropes and visit with former PGA Tour player and author of four books on golf and performance. That is Larry Miller. You can check him out, LarryMillerGolf.com. Good evening, Larry.
Well, good evening, everybody. Gee, football is just about over. It's very sad, but now we can turn our attention to golf.
Hey, we are going to talk some golf, but let's back up a moment. I know you and Connie, you love your LSU Tigers, and they dominated 42-25, and they're the national champ. What did you think about this exceptional football team?
Well, this team beat seven top 10 teams all year, and they didn't just beat them, but they averaged about 50 points a game over a 15-game span. Which is unprecedented. And they had a complete team. They had an unbelievable talent. Joe Burrow has developed into maybe one of the best college quarterbacks ever. He's going to have a great career as a professional. It was just a special year, and unlike anything we've ever seen from a college team to to average 50 points a game and beat seven top tens and then win the national championship. So we're real happy down here and proud. Alabama's been kicking us for a long time, and so we got a little bit of a payback here this year, but we got to keep it going.
Well, when we talk about LSU, that was one of the most impressive seasons in college football history. And you mentioned quarterback Joe Burrow. How successful do you think he's going to be in the NFL?
Oh, he's just he's a perfect fit. He's everyone really compares him to Brady. He's built just like Brady is, same physical build. And he's even got, his ability to read defenses and know what's going to happen before the play starts is really unusual for a college quarterback. He's going to be a star in the NFL. Now, he's going to have to go to the Cincinnati Bungles, but a lot of players are going to want to go there because he's there, and he might just turn that team around just like Drew Brees did here in New Orleans. He's going back to his home state, and he's going to have a lot of support. And I think the Cincinnati probably, have their hopes up very high, and deservedly so.
You know, after winning that national championship, he didn't have an adult beverage in his hand, but he was smoking that cigar. Did you see that, Larry?
Yeah, I bet the adult beverage came a little bit later.
Oh, my.
Hey. But anyway, well, you know, they were rewarded for what they did, and it was just, you know, and everything about it. He's not only a great talent, but he is a really good kid.
Yes.
Good head on his shoulders, very kind and very humble. And so, he's got all the traits that you need.
Larry Miller is a life member of the PGA of America and former PGA Tour player and author of 4 books on golf and performance. So speaking of winners, what about Cameron Smith of Australia? He wins the Sony Open. It's his first PGA Tour title. And you know what? He got it when he least expected it, right?
Yeah, and you know, that guy's been knocking on the door for a couple of years. If you go back and take a look, I mean, he's been in contention a whole bunch. And what I see about Cameron Smith is he looks to me to be a fierce competitor. He's not overwhelming physically, and he's not one of the longest guys out there compared to some of the big hitters. But he is gritty, and he's kind of like Kevin Kisner. You know, he's just a fierce competitor, and he's going to be tough in match play when the match play tournament rolls around. But I don't think you've seen the last of his victories. He's close a lot, and he's going to win a lot more than that one tournament.
A wonderful young man. Enjoyed listening to him post-round. You know, it was interesting, Larry. We talked last week about golf in Hawaii, and you were talking about, hey, it's a paradise, but that was hardly the conditions for these players. I mean, it was wet, it was windy, and that was definitely a factor. And Cameron, you know, as we talk about Cameron Smith winning it all, he had to earn it in some rain-soaked grass and mud.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about, being a fierce competitor. Those kind of guys, you know, they thrive in, you know, Jack Nicklaus used to say that when the conditions got real horrible, he said he could eliminate 80% of the field, because you'd walk in the locker room and guys were talking about, oh man, it's cold out there, the wind's really howling, it's going to be tough, it might rain and such and such. All negative thoughts. And so Nicklaus, every time he'd hear that, he'd scratch that player off the list of contenders, because he knew that you had to have a positive, competitive attitude, and you had to amp it up when the conditions get bad and get worse. So the great players, they can really excel in bad conditions because they're confident, they expect to play well, and they don't let any kind of external, you know, conditions or anything influence our games.
We are Inside the Ropes with Larry Miller right here at SB Nation Radio. And, you know, let's talk about one of the focal points this week on the PGA Tour, and that is the new pace of play policy. It will actually go into effect at the RBC Heritage in April, the week after the Masters. So let's highlight and talk about the Tour's pace of play policy. How big of a problem is pace of play on the Tour?
Well, it's a huge problem, and it's been unaddressed for years. They've always had rules on the books for slow play and get penalized for it. And I can remember back in the 70s and 80s, they would penalize players. Jack Nicklaus, best player of all time, probably, used to get penalized. He was very, very slow early on, and he would get penalized quite often. Somehow in the ensuing years, they stopped enforcing the slow play rule. And I've always had a theory it's because they want more airtime on TV to get more ads in. And that's kind of a skeptical look at it, but I guarantee you, you know, it's all about the cash. And I think that had a lot to do with it. But the outcry has been so loud about slow play now from all corners of golf that I think they're forced to do something about it. Now, let's just hope they enforce the new rules. That's the key, is to enforce it.
So what do you think is causing the slow play? I mean, it's frustrating when you're waiting on someone that while they're, you know, reading their green reading book, right?
Well, golf has become more scientific. You know, it's always been, in one of my books, I call it a beautiful blend of art and science. And that's what it is. Because you take the science that you learn, and then you use your art, your ability to create, to use that science to play the game. And but it's become more scientific, you know, with you've got these laser range finders, and you've got green reading books, and you've got aim point, and you have all these scientific tools now that that you know, takes less art and more science to play. And so because of that, you have all these things to consider and deal with and calculate, and that's why it's taking longer. And not only that, but players need to be ready to play when it's their turn, instead of beginning the ritual and the routine after the other player plays. You have to do all that stuff while the other players are playing. You have to get your yardages, decide what kind of shot you're going to hit and what club you're going to hit. And then when you get to the ball, you only need a few seconds to reassess the wind or whatever and then pull the trigger. So that's part of it. But I think that's what has contributed to the slow play.
So, Larry, take us out to the course. You're out there and you're with someone and they are playing slow. How do you address it? How should you handle it?
Well, you know, it's up to the officials to do that. And when they don't, players are reluctant to start any controversy, you know, with another player, because it does two things. It upsets both players.
That's right.
And you don't need, you know, golf is a game of concentration and focus, and you don't need something disturbing that, like a confrontation with another player. So it's usually always been left up to the officials. But when the officials don't enforce it, it really causes stress and strain on the fellow competitors when you have a slow player. So I think that the new deal of focusing on who is playing slow individually instead of, you know, targeting a group, because it's really not fair to penalize or warn a group when it's one player causing the problem.
Glad you're with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You can connect with us. Join us online at Twitter at eRadio Sports. Info, eRadioSports.com and PodcastArena.com. Do you think the European Tour, that they have a problem with slow play like we do here in the States?
No, it's not as bad at all. I think the players themselves, you know, they tried an experiment last year, I think it was, or a year before, with a shot clock. And they had a shot clock on the players. And it reduced the time of the round by more than 30 or 40 minutes. It was amazing, the effect that it had. And guess what? The players were all for it. They were happy about it, because they don't like to take 5 and 6 hours to play a round of golf, because it's hard to focus and concentrate
right
for that long.
Uh-huh.
So the players were happy about it. Now, I'm not advocating a shot clock on the PGA Tour, although I wouldn't be against it. But the reason I'm not advocating is because they're not going to do it. But I wouldn't mind seeing them doing that. But I just hope, failing that they enforce the slow play rule and really penalize these individual players who are causing the slow play problem.
Well, and Larry, you know, there's been several high-profile players like Brooks Koepka and Rory McIlroy. They are sick and tired of the slow play, and they've been very vocal about it, and they've vented their frustration. Just how much, as you're saying, you know, Larry, it's gotten out of hand, and you need high-profile players like that, you know, sharing their opinion.
Well, that's right. And when the high-profile players, when the elite players start complaining vocally, you know, and voicing their opinions, you know, to the publicly, then it carries more weight with the officials, and they almost become forced to do something about it. And, you know, I just hope more players start joining in with the complaining about it and really get on these tour officials. It's the tour officials' fault. You know, they're the ones that cave in to the networks and stuff and say, yeah, we're going to try to stretch this out for 5.5 hours. And gee, let's hope we have a sudden death playoff so we can stay on the air longer.
Larry Miller with us inside the ropes, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Let's continue this conversation next week, because I have to wonder, as a junior player, you know, what is the best way to adapt playing faster? How should you practice? Because not just the PGA, but the AJGA, they are really emphasizing pace of play policy. They want to enforce that. So let's talk about that next week, Larry.
Great, great. That'll be a great subject to look forward to.
Absolutely. Much more coming your way.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, we are back, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Are you doing a repair that needs a special tool? O'Reilly Auto Parts makes it easy with the Loaner Tool Program. Over 80 specialized loaner tools are available, so O'Reilly's is sure to have the tool in stock that you need to get the job done. Purchase the needed parts and put down a deposit on a loaner tool, then return the tool in the original condition and receive a full refund. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Well, the 2020 NFL playoffs, they've been whittled down to four teams. So the AFC, the NFC championship games are set for Sunday. So we're going to get you ready for Super Bowl 54 and see if the team you project will win it all. Delighted to have back with us. That is Neil Greenberg, sports writer with the Washington Post. Good to have you back again. Thank you, Neil.
Great to be back. Exciting weekend ahead.
Absolutely. Well, we're looking forward to this weekend's games. And last time you were on the show, we had you talk about the additions and subtractions that took place within the Washington Redskins. And once again, the Redskins have made another major front office move, this time promoting Kyle Smith. Is this a good thing? He will be, what, the vice president of player personnel?
Yeah, I think it is good in that it seems like it's going to be Ron Rivera's show right now. He'll have final to say on the roster. So the cook will be able to actually shop for the ingredients. And then he's got some savvy people around him that'll be able to handle the pro scouting, the college scouting, and the salary cap. Whether this means that there will be a GM in the future is tough to say, but for right now, it looks like this is how the front office is going to be structured. So it's a complete departure from what the Redskins have done in the past. So it's probably going to be an improvement, because let's face it, it couldn't get any worse with what was going on in Ashburn.
Well, it has been, what, over 2 weeks since Ron Rivera was named the new head coach of the Redskins. So, Neil, give us your takeaways from his press conference when he was announced as the 30th head coach in franchise history.
Well, I think it definitely signaled a change that was much needed. You look at how he's perceived around the league, and a lot of it has been positive so far. The one thing I found a little bit surprising was how noncommittal he was to Dwayne Haskins, the quarterback that was drafted in 2018 with a first-round pick. He seemed to suggest that Haskins would not necessarily be anointed the team's starter going forward, and that there would be some veterans that would also push for the job. The two backup quarterbacks that were on the roster are free agents, so who knows where they're going to be. So it'll be interesting to see the dynamic there. And I think, you know, Dwayne Haskins is probably the key to Ron Rivera's legacy in Washington, because if he's not the guy to go forward, it's very difficult to win in the NFL with a subpar quarterback. And if he is the guy, it's going to take a little bit of time for him to develop, because he, you know, he only got to play half a season last year, and he's going to be dealing with a new offensive coordinator and a new head coach. So that's going to be the key person I'm looking at in terms of where he lines up and where he fits in Rivera's organization.
Sports writer with the Washington Post, Neil Greenberg, with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Many different ways to connect. You can join us on Twitter at eRadio Sports, info eRadioSports.com, and podcastarena.com. Okay, you talk some offense and quarterback with Dwayne Haskins, but Rivera is a former NFL linebacker. So defense, Neil, is going to be at the forefront of his mind. What, he played 9 seasons with the Bears. What are we hearing defensively? What's going to happen with the Redskins?
Well, he brought in Jack Del Rio to be his defensive coordinator, which I think was a smart move, because I'm not sure that Ron Rivera is like a defensive whiz kid that automatically makes the defense better.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of talent on the defensive roster, and they may be able to pick up more in the draft with Chase Young at the number 2 pick. But the defense, I think, is going to have to be the strength of this team, because that's where most of the pieces are in place. You look at the offense, and you know, there's question mark at quarterback. There's question mark at tight end. They got one receiver. There's, you know, the question marks at running back and on the offensive line. But the defense has a lot of parts, a lot of young talent, a lot of former players from Alabama, which, you know, based on their history is pretty good. So we'll see how Rivera and Del Rio are able to, you know, to bring along these young guys like Jonathan Allen, like Montez Sweat, but also figure out what's going to happen with the older guys like Ryan Kerrigan, who, you know, had an okay season. But, you know, with Deron Payne, Sweat, Allen, and then you have a guy, you know, like Josh Norman, you have to figure out. But another bright spot in Quentin Dunbar, who is one of the best shutdown corners in the league after Richard Sherman of the 49ers, there are some pieces there. And I think the defense, even if it just gets a little bit better, if they get a little bit better on third down, if they get a little bit better on the red zone, can at least make this team less than a laughing stock. But it's going to be the offense that ultimately is going to be required to bring them back to respectability. And if they want to contend for this division, got to get the offense in gear.
How much better will they be? I mean, how many more wins do you think that they'll rack up in 2020, Neil?
If Dwayne Haskins is the guy, maybe another 3, 4, or 5. I mean, I think at best the ceiling for next year is an 8-8 team. I don't think they're ready to contend for the division anytime soon. I think if they can get to 8-8, that's a huge step in the right direction. It's really going to remain to be seen, like what they do in free agency and what they do in the draft. But right now, I'm looking at 8-8 to be the ceiling for year one.
Okay, so we hit on the Redskins. Talk to me about the Ravens. They pretty much stumbled at the end. How surprising was that?
It was very surprising. You're looking at this Ravens club that has, you know, what looks to be the MVP of the league in Lamar Jackson. Very difficult to game plan for Lamar Jackson during the season. And I know a lot of people were looking for the Ravens to at least make the Super Bowl. I saw some estimates that the Ravens were like a 64% chance to win the Super Bowl headed into that Tennessee game. But you got to give Tennessee a lot of credit. I mean, they were able to stifle the Ravens offense at just about every turn. They capitalized on every mistake that the Ravens made. And I don't necessarily think that this is a referendum on Baltimore going forward. I think they're going to be a strong team, but we've seen probably no better organism at adapting than an NFL defense. And now that there's a year, 2 years of tape on Baltimore, I think it's going to be much more difficult for Lamar Jackson to be as good, right? We've seen these dual threat quarterbacks come into the league, gangbusters, but then start to slowly fizzle out, right? RG3, Cam Newton, you know, Russell Wilson has had probably the best success, but he's not just a pure runner, right? He can certainly throw the ball as well. So I think that you know, Baltimore probably lost one of its best shots to make the Super Bowl. I think they'll be a top team in the AFC next year, but I don't think they'll be as this explosive of an offense next year.
Hey, Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio. Let's pause, Neil. Where can they check out all of your work online?
WashingtonPost.com. You can search for my name or go to follow me on Twitter at @ngreenberg. I usually post everything there, and also maybe some hot takes on candy and comic books. You never really know.
You're a diverse guy. Okay, so we highlight talking about the Ravens and this stunning playoff exit, and you were giving credit to Tennessee, but we also, you know, you really got to tip your hat to Derrick Henry. He certainly helped the Titans, you know, single-handedly overcome the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, he's a beast. And
he is a beast, know, that's right.
You know, the Titans are doing something that has been shunned in the NFL, right? I mean, running backs have been phased out at the expense of the passing game, but Tennessee committed with Derrick Henry when they were leading, when they were trailing. I mean, they've literally have hopped on Henry's back and are riding him to a Super Bowl. First player to run for 175 yards or more in two games in the same postseason, the only one to do it in three consecutive games. I mean, he just is absolute gangbusters coming through the defensive line. And what makes him so difficult is he's averaging over 4 yards per carry after contact this season.
Wow.
In both the regular season and the playoffs. So, you know, once he has the ball, he's getting yardage, and you know, it's just amazing, and he's able to break off for huge runs as well, right? I mean, he's got 23 runs of 15 yards or more in the regular season and the playoffs combined. Only two other players have more than 13. I mean, he just has the size and the strength and the speed to make big plays. And that's allowed, you know, Tennessee to rely on him. And, you know, other teams might look at Tennessee as kind of a blueprint, but unless you have a guy like Henry, who, oh, by the way, led the league in rushing during the regular season, it's going to be really difficult. So I think Tennessee has this running back that matches up perfectly against Kansas City defense, which is not strong against the run, especially up the middle. I think Tennessee is primed for an upset here and is looking pretty good for a Super Bowl.
Absolutely. When we talk about the AFC Championship, the Titans and the Chiefs, and we wanted you to weigh in on that particular game because, you know, Houston fans, we're still reeling from that heartbreaking loss. It was an epic collapse.
Yeah, I mean, this is... You look up at the scoreboard in the first quarter, what, 21-0, and you got to feel really good about yourselves. But then Kansas City's offense just is probably the best offense from top to bottom in the National Football League. I mean, Pat Mahomes, the tight end Kelce, Tyreek Hill, I mean, they cause all sorts of matchup problems. And man, the offense was just so efficient in that game. I mean, it was just like a surgeon going through once they spotted him, 21 points. And, you know, I think that is going to obviously make the Chiefs an overwhelming favorite in this matchup, as they should be the favorite. But again, I think if Tennessee can get a lead and establish the run with Henry, I don't think Kansas City's defense will be able to keep up. You know, maybe Kansas City has another comeback in them, but, you know, comebacks like that, as you know, don't happen too often. And any team that's been involved in that big of a shootout, what was there, like 83 total points in that game?
It's crazy stuff.
Has lost their next game. I want to say like five of the six teams involved in those type of shootouts have lost their next game in the playoffs. So I think things are setting up pretty well for Tennessee, but we'll see you over the weekend.
Give me a hit on Patrick Mahomes. Is he the most talented passer in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy, right? He's the league MVP, and then he might have improved a little bit. I think that many were expecting his touchdown rate to go down because it was so high, but he's the most valuable passer in the postseason per some of the advanced metrics that are out there. He was the second most valuable passer during the regular season behind Lamar Jackson. This kid, I'm going to go out on a limb here, but I think this kid's got a future in the NFL.
Our NFL news and notes continue with Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour one, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's rejoin from the Washington Post, Neil Greenberg. Okay, so we hit on the AFC Championship, the Titans and the Chiefs. Let's shift gears. NFC Championship Packers and the 49ers. Who's going to come out on top?
I like San Francisco, and I like San Francisco because of Richard Sherman. I think he is going to be the key here. Aaron Rodgers does not like throwing at Sherman. Rodgers has thrown 283 passes against Sherman's teams. That includes his time in Seattle. Only 19 of those 283 passes have been into Sherman's coverage. Just 12 of those have been complete for 129 yards, no touchdowns, and an interception. He's pretty much taken away half the field. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers offense won't be able to use Devontae Adams, the hero of the game against Seattle, in the same way. They may have to line up Devontae Adams in the slot to get him away from Richard Sherman. Sherman does not cover slot receivers, but, you know, San Francisco's regular slot corner, Kawan Williams, was the fourth best slot corner of 2019. I mean, this San Francisco pass defense is no joke. I think they're going to dare Aaron Jones to run past him. I think they'll be able to stop him. I think San Francisco wins big in this one.
AFC, NFC Championship, getting you ready. Now we've got to talk our final topic tonight. Neil Greenberg with us from the Washington Post. Talk to me about my Dallas Cowboys. What do you think of the hire? Come on, Neil. What do you think of the hire of Mike McCarthy?
I think it's interesting. I think that... you know, Mike McCarthy, one of his selling points as a head coach was how he was going to build his whole analytics department. And, you know, as someone that covers sports analytics for a living, I mean, his idea was spot on perfect the way that he had it broken out. And I think he's going to bring, you know, a fresh perspective to the Dallas Cowboys. And I think that he can do a lot with that offense, assuming that they're able to keep it intact, right? Dak Prescott's going to be in for a big payday. I think that Dallas is one of these teams that isn't afraid to spend money. They're not afraid to go out and get a player that they want. And I think Mike McCarthy learned a lot of lessons during his time in the NFL, especially with Green Bay. And I think that it's a really good hire. I don't see anyone challenging Dallas and Philadelphia for the right to be at the top of the NFC East anytime soon. I think the Giants are in a shambles, and I think the Redskins have a lot to prove. So I actually like the hire. I think that if you can get an organization like Dallas to be more efficient, that's really what the end goal of analytics are. With all the talent they have on both sides of the board, they can on the field, they can be dangerous over the next couple of years.
Well, it'll be fascinating to watch and see if Mike McCarthy's system, it benefits Dak and the Cowboys offense. But let's talk hypotheticals. I mean, should the Cowboys pursue a free agent and go after Tom Brady? I mean, we need a 42-year-old. You know, that would be an upgrade over Dak, right?
I'm not sure that, like, Tom Brady would be an upgrade over me at this point. I mean, he's on the downside of his career. I don't think this year was a fluke. I think that, age is undefeated. And
that's true.
You know, the body of work that Tom Brady had is exceptional. But everybody succumbs to father time. And I think his best days are way behind him. And so, no, I don't think Brady's the answer. Just stick with what you got. I mean, Dak Prescott can do what he can do, and Ezekiel Elliott, and, they had Amari Cooper. I mean, there's a lot to like on that Dallas defense. I don't think bringing in a guy like Tom Brady would help them in any way. Actually, I think it would be a downgrade.
Uh-huh. Hey, good stuff tonight. Neil Greenberg, Washington Post. Check him out. He has been with us at SB Nation Radio. Thank you so much, Neil.
Thank you. Enjoy the game.
Of course. Much more coming your way. The next generation of sports radio, SB Nation.